In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, June 28, 2013, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. It's the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour, every week selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. And this week, my experts are John Salamone of FMP Consulting. It is great to see you, my friend. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me on the show, Francis.
I'm happy to do it. You've got three great stories, and we'll get to those in just a minute. And Larry Allen is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, back again. Good to see you, too.
Good Friday afternoon, Francis.
Thank you very much, and same to you. And what you've done, each of you, is you have chosen the stories that you think are the three most important for the week to people who work for the federal government. You have ranked them in order from number three to number one, and we're ready to count them down on the Federal News Countdown. We start where we start every single time that we do this program with...
Number three!
John, your third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is, Expect Security Clearance Delays. Steve Losey's story is a good one, but I must confess, when I read the headline before I got into the story in the wake of the Edward Snowden case, my response to that headline was, duh, you think.
Right.
But this is kind of, I think Steve Bucci of the Heritage Foundation makes a good point in this piece. The pendulum swings. For a long time, the emphasis at OPM really was on, we got to knock these out as fast as we possibly can.
Right, most definitely. And I think, you know, from an historical perspective, the article was fascinating to me because I worked on the Hill during the Intelligence Reform Act. And, you know, if you remember just very quickly, that law gave specific authorities to the administration to really streamline the security clearance process, required reciprocity. And, you know, I think the pendulum may be swinging. And if you look in today's Washington Post, there was an article about one of the contracting firms that said that it's almost like they're repeatedly misleading the government in terms of the thoroughness of their background investigation. So incredibly fascinating. And I mean, from my perspective, I think this the Snowden case could have a chilling effect on security clearances really in two areas. First, I think some may use this as an opportunity to put tighter controls on background investigations and say, is this really an inherently governmental function? I mean, if you remember, OPM back in the 90s spun off into an employee stock ownership program that created this new company that's been basically conducting about 45% of the investigations for the federal government. So is this really an inherently governmental function or not? And the second thing, I think, that where there might be a real loser is the reciprocity of security clearances. So one agency, they don't necessarily trust one another, but there are provisions in the law and parameters and regulation to set up reciprocity. And if you cannot trust when an individual comes from one agency to another or from a private sector company into the government, are we going to be adding to the backlog and creating more timeliness standards?
Well, and this, I think, is a terrific example of the issues that agencies have across government with backlog problems. I mean, same thing at VA. We can talk about processing the disability claims as fast as we want, but if they're not processed effectively and correctly, then we're not doing anybody any favors.
Yep, most definitely. And I worked on the Social Security disability issue when I worked for Senator Voinovich, and it was the same issue. People were literally dying waiting for their Social Security disability checks to be processed. And it's a high-risk issue. Both VA and Social Security disability deemed as high-risk by the Government Accountability Office.
Where do you see this headed? I mean, there are a lot of possibilities, but when this settles, what do you see?
I see potential legislation, lots of hearings, obviously, as this unfolds. I see an OPM and IG investigation that will open the door for all of those aforementioned issues.
In other words, ugliness coming.
Ugliness, I think so.
John Salamone's third most important federal news story of the week is titled Expect Security Clearance Delays. It's in the Federal Times, and it's linked up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Larry Allen, your third most important federal news story of the week is the headline, Too Much Collaboration is Hurting Productivity. And this is from NextGov. It is Vicki Elmer's story there, and it is similar to a story I saw in the Wall Street Journal this week that I tweeted about the openness of the cubicle layouts, where people, the opportunity to work together turns out to be a bigger distraction than a productivity enhancer.
Well, that's exactly right, Francis. We'd had in both government and industry for the last decade a trend towards open workplaces. And in fact, some of the CEOs make a big deal about sitting in the bullpen with their employees. Some of the agency heads do that. I think Dan Tangerlini does a little bit of that over at the General Services Administration. And what this article kind of brought home was that there is still a benefit to being able to do private work and still the need for individual employees to focus. You can collaborate on a lot of things during the course of putting a project together. But when you're trying to get that project finished off, being able to shut yourself away or not be distracted by an impromptu meeting that's taking place next to you is kind of important. And what this report says, it's from the Gensler Company, my go-to quote is that it actually has diminishing returns, mm-hmm. collaboration. And I think that as government and government contractors look at ways forward, the need to be able to have that personal space to, in order to be individually productive, as well as shared space to be collaborative, both need to be weighed a little bit more evenly.
Gensler surveyed, it says here, 2,035 knowledge workers. I'm not sure what. Hey, the HR expert over here, John Salomon, what's a knowledge worker? What's the category mean exactly?
All knowing.
Oh. Like you, Francis.
Smarter than us. No, this is not me. I guarantee you that. But this 2,000 people is a pretty decent sized survey, so we can feel fairly confident, I think, that the results that they got are indicative of what people are finding in the workplace, it seems to me.
They are, and I was speaking to one of my clients about this topic yesterday. It was a top five government contractor. They had gone to an open office structure, and they said, look, not only did we have to put space back for individual workers to get things done, we also incurred some costs that we hadn't originally anticipated, the need to have special headphones that didn't that absorbed all the noise so that you could actually have a conversation in one cubicle and the person next to you could get his or her work done. So there's a look, we saw some benefits from this, but we definitely concur with the results in this report because we've had to back up a little bit and understand that there's only so much we can do without hurting ourselves.
Larry Allen's third most important federal news story of the week is from NextGov. The headline is Too Much Collaboration is Hurting Productivity, and you can read it and all of the stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Back on the Federal News Countdown in just a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose.
This week's Experts in Health topic is Benefits of Walking, featuring Dr. Mack, an internal medicine provider with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Towson Medical Center.
Walk for your health. Exercising benefits your entire body. If you're thinking about starting a fitness routine, walking's a great way to start. Walking for 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, boosts your health. It's good for your heart, muscles, and bones. It reduces your risk of cardiovascular disease and diabetes. Reduces abdominal obesity, burns almost as many calories as running at a moderate pace, boosts metabolism, is gentle on your joints. Personally, it helps me relax and decreases my stress. Most importantly, walking can be sustained. Walking daily is an exercise pattern that is simple enough to continue for many years, helping to maintain a healthy weight over the long term.
For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. The Information Management Minute, provided by Iron Mountain.
According to the Presidential Directive on Records Management, government records are the foundation of open government, supporting transparency, participation, and collaboration. These records can be used to improve business processes, knowledge sharing, and the assessment of programs. The directive instructs agencies to eliminate paper and use electronic record keeping instead, regardless of security classifications. Agencies should also consider the benefits of digitizing permanent records created in hard copy format or other analog formats like microfiche.
Is your agency looking to realize better efficiencies and cost savings through a proven information management program? Iron Mountain stores and protects billions of information assets, including paper records, backup tapes,
electronic files and medical data, helping federal agencies manage their entire information lifecycle. Learn more at ironmountain.com/radio.
Researchers are engineering ways to control individual cells in our nervous system, and the potential applications are mind-boggling. Using gene therapy techniques, specific brain and nerve cells can be equipped with light-sensitive molecules. Ed Boyden, a bioengineer at MIT, says they serve as switches.
Well, what we've been able to do now is to turn on and off different cells in the brain using light.
Boyden says new fiber optics can deliver complex 3D light patterns in the brain and elsewhere in the body. So these methods could block chronic pain, stop seizures, reactivate damaged nerve pathways, and more.
Now we can try to play back complex neural codes, like the kind that might represent a visual scene or a decision directly to the brain.
Yes, someday, maybe even literally putting thoughts in people's minds. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. For the 2014 budget, everyone's acting as if the sequestration is no longer the law of the land. But it is, and that could be disaster. We'll have more from military budget analyst Todd Harrison. And China now has the world's fastest supercomputer. A computer scientist says that could have strategic consequences for the United States. Those stories and much more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Countdown this week, which the three most important federal news stories of the week is selected by John Salamone and Larry Allen, and we are up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by John Salamone. It's from GovExec. It's Charlie Clark's piece titled GAO Gets Tough on Obama Implementation of Performance Act. And we had Robert Shea on the program talking about this on Wednesday, and we have that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And this is, as we went item by item through this report, this is not good. I mean, this is a serious issue, it seems to me.
No, and it ties into Larry's first story a little bit about collaboration, because the government actually promotes collaboration, and they have a legal framework, the Government Performance and Results Act, that says you have to collaborate on cross-agency priority goals. So it's really interesting. But I think every time I come on the show, I seem to work in a GIPRA angle. But you know, in the audit, GAO said that the agencies have done some good things, but they're missing opportunities to address cross-agency cutting issues. They need to continue. They continue facing difficulties with measuring performance. There's communication issues. And then something that I used to talk about a lot when I was on the Hill as well is that, you know, the agency performance issues are never really used for congressional decisions. And here's, you talk about Robert, but here's the real life example on why this matters, Francis. And I know you had Senator Coburn on your show last Friday. Mm-hmm. And so he's issuing letters basically to agencies saying that, you know, you have wasteful programs in your departments, in your agencies. And I don't want to get into the merits of what he was saying in terms of specific programs, but agencies need to think strategically about their programs. They need to make sure that they measure them. They need to make sure that they tie back into the mission, and they need to make sure that they have ways to communicate the impact, not only to OMB, but to Congress, to GAO, to their stakeholders, to the United States citizens. Because if you cannot justify a budget, you cannot justify a program, we shouldn't do it. And I've long been an advocate of good program management. And I think what we're going to be heading toward, if you look at the demographics of the nation and the demographics of the federal workforce, pay freezes, hiring freezes, increased retirements, we're going to have, I'll call it, programmatic Darwinism, that only the strong programs are going to survive. And those programs that survive are the ones that can justify the impact that they make.
Well, my observation as I thought of this after I talked to Robert on Wednesday, but my thought is the unwillingness of agencies to do some of these things indirectly, and it's very indirectly, I'll say that up front, but it's indirectly responsible for, I think, for sequestration. Because what happens is Congress can't cut or won't cut because they don't have evidence on which to base the cuts.
Right.
They can't go to you and say, John, we love you, you're terrific, but look, here's the data that shows you're just not cutting it, so we have to cut this program loose. And so they get into a situation where then, through continued inactivity, they do nothing, and so the deadline comes, they can't think of anything else to do, so they cut everything the same amount of money, the good programs as well as the bad ones.
Right, most definitely, and I wrote an article with Rich Hartman earlier in the year from OhMyGov about this, and basically we said that program managers are the ones that have to get control of the message. They have to be the biggest advocates of their programs. They know what works, they know what doesn't work, they know what they need, and they don't know, and they know what they don't need. And if an agency is running a program and it's not mission critical, then why are they doing it?
Mm-hmm.
And think about overlap and duplication of federal programs, two agencies doing similar things. One, it's mission critical in one agency, not mission critical in another. Why is the agency that it's not mission critical doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Redeploy their resources to mission critical programs, offer buyouts, early outs to individuals that don't have the skills, and move forward.
Just get on with it and get it over with. When you look at this stuff, Larry, I mean, you're looking at it primarily from the other side, which is the industry trying to do business with the agencies. But, I mean, this kind of thing impacts that equation a lot, too.
It does. And to John's point, Francis, you, to my mind, immediately came in weapon systems.
Mm. Right.
You know, one of the reasons why we have the types of weapon systems we have is because Congress mandates certain spending on weapon systems that the equivalent of program managers, the generals and colonels, admirals and so forth, understand that they no longer have the need for. And yet there are political purposes in play. And I use the military as an example because it's very obvious, but you could extrapolate that out across government. There are political and representational power cells behind a lot of these individual programs. It makes it politically difficult, if not impossible, to get rid of them in some cases. So it's not just a manner of applying sound management tactics to government operations. It's understanding the political aspect of it as well and what impact that has. And in some cases, what impact it should have, and in other cases, why that's detrimental.
The example of that I always come back to is the F-35, and I don't remember the exact number, but a defense analyst that I trust a lot said that program will never die. No matter how awful it winds up looking, it will never die. And I said, why is that? And he said, because there are installations, not military installations, but there are places in, I think he said, 43 states where some part of that program does business. And so everybody has enough of a piece of it that it just will never die because of exactly what you're talking about, Larry.
Right. And contractors know that and plan accordingly. But, you know, they're just playing by the rules that they were given.
Mm. The second most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by John Salamone, is from GovExec. The headline is GAO Gets Tough on Obama Implementation of Performance Act. You can read it and find a link to the GAO report that this story is about at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Larry Allen's choice for the second most important federal news story of the week is up next on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. It's been a long-held belief that people with rheumatoid arthritis were immune from gout.
So gout is a disease of metabolism, and in gout, we produce too much uric acid or we don't get rid of enough uric acid. And rheumatoid arthritis, in contrast, is an autoimmune disease. So they're distinctly different. The treatment is completely different also.
Dr. Eric Madison is a Mayo Clinic rheumatologist who led a study which suggests the two do coexist. RA patients used to be given aspirin in high doses, and that coincidentally helped their kidneys expel uric acid.
I think that it is probably true that flares of rheumatoid arthritis, in some cases, might have actually been flares of gout, and that the gout wasn't diagnosed.
Awareness that gout does exist in patients with rheumatoid arthritis hopefully will lead to better management of gout in those patients. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McRae.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. There are many things that you can do to keep your internal clock or circadian rhythm in sync, which in turn helps your metabolism or how you burn calories. Dr. Corinne Silva at NIH offers these suggestions.
get a good night's sleep, and that's an average of 7 hours. Don't eat late in the day. Of course, always a low-fat diet as opposed to a high-fat diet is better no matter what time of day you eat it.
She adds that exercise also helps keep your circadian rhythm in sync. For more information about sleep cycles and metabolic disorders, visit www.niddk.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
At VAE Systems, we always focus on keeping troops safe. One challenge military pilots face, it's called a brownout. When helicopter pilots confront dust storms or fog, the risk of collision is much higher. That's why we created a technology that lets pilots see terrain and obstacles through these conditions. Knowing our work helps to save lives inspires us every day. We'll be there on the next front. That's VAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at vaesystems.com/nextfront.
What you can't see about what you see. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, eye problems don't always give you a heads up. Dr. Jinan Sadeen of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says they can affect people of any age and might not have symptoms until late in the condition. Older people have a greater chance of developing eye disease and other vision problems, so Dr. Sadeen says people ages 65 or older should have their eyes checked every 2 years, or as recommended by their eye doctor.
For example, people with diabetes should have an annual comprehensive dilated eye exam to detect diabetic retinopathy at an early stage.
Older people might notice some symptoms, such as difficulty driving at night or seeing billboards or road signs, but some problems are a normal part of aging and can be easily corrected with glasses or contact lenses. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The second annual Multiple Award Government and Industry Conference will bring together federal acquisition thought leaders to discuss the changing landscape of GWACs and MACs, from new vehicles like Oasis and Megamacs like Eagle to the expanding federal strategic sourcing initiative. Join them July 10th to the 12th for MAGIC 2013 and hear from NASA, HHS, DHS, SBA, GSA, DOD, and the Hill as they provide insight on using these contracts to acquire the latest technologies. Register today at magicgov.org.
Now your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update, afternoons at 30 minutes past the hour. The former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is under investigation for allegedly leaking classified information. The Washington Post and NBC News report retired Marine Corps General James Cartwright has been told he is the target of a Justice Department probe. The leak occurred in connection with a U.S. cyber offensive exercise called Olympic Games. It started under the Bush administration, and Cartwright pushed for its expansion by President Obama. But information escaped about the Stuxnet virus, which the U.S. is believed to have aimed at disabling Iran's nuclear fuel processing program. Cartwright reportedly alerted President Obama to the fact that the potent Stuxnet worm had escaped into the general internet. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown this week has the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by John Salamone and Larry Allen. And Larry, your second most important story is a Reuters News Service story headlined, "What Small Government Fans Should Learn from Walmart." Now, full disclosure, I love Walmart. I am a sucker for Walmart and Sam's. We've passed on Costco and we're Sam's Club members in my house. So I'm predisposed to liking thoughts about Walmart, and I was just flummoxed that you were able to work Walmart into your story selection this week. What did you like that you saw
here? Well, Francis, if I had a subtitle for this article, it would be "Why We Can't Afford to Buy Cheap."
Hmm.
And that's kind of the story here. And what caught my eye about it was that, you know, they say right in the first line, Walmart is the avatar of low cost. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, it is. But if you read through the article, they found that, look, there's such a thing as trying to buy too cheaply, and we still have a brand name we have to maintain. And really, if we're trying to get at lower costs, then maybe we need to be looking at things like distribution channels, and we need to be looking at supply chains, and not necessarily just the I got it for less syndrome, because that ended up hurting them. And I think that in the government market today, there's so much of an emphasis on low price, technically acceptable procurement that there's a good lesson in here for government buyers as well. You know, we oftentimes hear people in Congress, people in the media, people outside of government saying, why can't the government buy more like Walmart? Well, in this case, I would say, yes, why can't they buy more like Walmart? But that's because Walmart came at their low price structure from a very strategic basis. And they understood that there was a lot more to it than simply driving down prices to a price point where nobody in the supply chain could be happy with it. And so I think there needs to be that understanding in government that there is a value intrinsic to having efficient systems, but that that value is not always reflected in having the equivalent of a working backbone made up of Yugos.
The writer of this piece, Eric Schnurr, writes this. Costliness generally isn't due to everyone and everything, but rather a few specific problems. In most cases, investing in avoiding the problem costs less than enduring the problem itself. And the setup here, John, is a deal on healthcare costs and what they cost Walmart. They discovered that it wasn't the fact that they would pay to insure everyone. It was the fact that they're just like any other population. There are a small group of people that use an outsized ratio of the benefits involved. And so taking care of those people and helping them get healthier on an ongoing basis winds up being cheaper in the long run. And that's exactly what Larry's talking about approaching value. And we have this discussion about all kinds of things in government. And it seems like that this conversation is one that Larry's right. We don't have this kind of conversation very often in government. And I wonder why you think that is.
I think it's a difficult conversation to have at times because we don't always know what the costs are of, you know, streamlining, for instance, a business process. How much money are we saving streamlining a business process? And it ties back to some of the recommendations that GAO made. Can we have to come up with metrics and we have to come up with measures and a quantifiable way to capture that information for real cost savings. And the government, you know, struggles with this day in and day out. You know, we try and work with our colleagues and our clients on designing metrics and measures, but it's not always an easy thing because you can't necessarily see the linkage. And I think with a supply chain with Walmart, they could figure out what it costs in key pieces of the supply chain. But for an HR process, how much does it cost a government agency from a human capital standpoint? I'll stick to what I know. How much are we saving if a manager doesn't sit on a certification to hire somebody?
Mm-hmm.
If it takes 20 days versus 30 days, what's that cost? We just don't know.
Mm. And if you get a bad candidate,
right,
because that person wasn't involved,
right,
who's going to be managing that person?
Right.
That's a whole other issue.
Yep, most definitely.
This guy, Eric Schnurr, gets at something that I've tried to get at this show, on this program on a number of occasions that I think gets lost in the political discussion, Larry. He writes, the proper level of public spending is a separate issue from whether it should be as effective and efficient as possible. And that conversation drowns in Congress daily, it seems.
Well, in Congress and the executive branch, that both for all the alleged strategic planning take things on in a very tactical manner in a day-by-day basis. Take, for example, the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative. You know, if you were having a strategic sourcing discussion in the commercial market, Francis, you'd be having the type of discussion that you've just talked about. You know, not just what are we spending things on, but what's our proper level of spend and what should we be doing anyway? Here, it's just, can we keep doing what we're already doing for less?
Mm-hmm.
And that's only looking at one part of this. And you're never going to get the type of savings, the lasting savings out of that type of tactical approach that you would out of the harder work to do that takes a little bit more strategic planning. One of the things about Walmart that they've always been able to do is they built in these efficiencies up front, which in fairness to the government is a lot more easy to do than trying to shift gears when you've already have thousands of programs up and running with the aforementioned different political constituencies behind each one. So I understand that it's not an easy thing to do, and nevertheless, if you keep only looking at one part of the equation, I'm no math expert, but you're never going to understand the full problem.
If you would have asked me at the beginning of the show, John, if there was a way that we would wind up tying his number two story about Walmart to your number two story about a GAO report on performance, I would have said there's no way. And yet we find, based on his comment, that they're very closely linked in that. If the idea is to just keep doing what you're doing for less and never look at possibilities of things that we should stop doing or things that we're not doing that we should start doing, then you're never going to be able to get to a point where you can think about managing your money in this way.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think, you know, the one thing, agencies are under so much pressure to get things done, pressure to move things forward. I think if they really took a hard look, say they were looking at updating and modernizing some of their business processes because they were going through a technology solution or they're going to implement a technology solution. Well, take the time to really streamline those business processes. And it might take you 2 months longer than just rushing it through. But if you do it right, you will save time, energy, and resources on the back end, that whole life cycle. So I like the connection. I think there's a definite connection. Good stuff.
Larry Allen's second most important federal news story of the week is Reuters News Service story headlined, What Small Government Fans Should Learn from Walmart. It is by Eric Schnorr, and it is on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. We're up to the most important federal news story of the week in the countdown, selected by Larry Allen and John Salamone, and we'll get to number one next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Recently on Federal News Radio's Federal Tech Talk, sponsored by AT&T.
We are speaking with Phil Kemmelor, Senior Manager, Enterprise Intelligence, Digital Analytics at Ernst & Young, and we're talking about digital analytics for federal agencies.
Now the idea of engagement around content is important, and especially on government websites. You know, you're not buying anything, but you're looking at the kinds of tasks people are completing. Those are the kinds of things to measure and really understand, do they have the desired effect?
Secure Mobile Government is here.
Evaluate a department budget at a metro station.
You can now work out in the field with a smartphone and the safety and security of the AT&T network. AT&T extends the cyber defense perimeter of your agency's mobile workforce.
Study new employment stats while teleworking.
Your security is predictive and preventive. Go to att.com/gov/secure to learn how AT&T mobile security can safely connect you to both your agency and constituents. AT&T, rethink possible.
Are you a government contractor? Federal News Radio wants to know how sequestration is affecting you. Take our anonymous survey today. Tell us, how have you or your company been positively or negatively impacted by the cuts? Are you concerned about sequestration in 2014 and beyond? Good, bad, unexpected, indifferent, we'd like to hear your sequestration stories. Results of the survey will be published as part of a special report in July. Find the survey at federalnewsradio.com. Search Sequestration Survey.
If you know someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management, nominate them for Federal News Radio's 4th Annual COSI Awards. Help us call attention to best practices in your office and government-wide. You can nominate anyone, career, political, or a contractor working in the HR field. The award is named after Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike COSI and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the COSI Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search COSI Award.
You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com. Now your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. The contract award for the Defense Department's mobile device management system goes to a firm in Bethesda, Maryland. The total award of about $16 million is going to Digital Management Incorporated. Apart from building the DoD's management system for mobile devices, the contract includes building a DoD mobile application store. You get your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You're listening to the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected this week by John Salamone and Larry Allen, and we are up to
number one.
The most important story of the week is selected by Larry Allens from FederalNewsRadio.com. The headline is Army to cut brigades at 10 U.S. bases. And we'll learn more details about this later this afternoon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and FederalNewsRadio.com as I speak to Major General John Murray, the Director of Force Management at the Army. He'll be on to talk about this issue. But Larry, as you listened to General Odierno talk about this earlier in the week and thought about what it means, what strikes you here, and what does this mean, not just for the Army, but what does it mean for the community that sells to the Army?
Well, that's exactly right. That's why I picked this as number one, Francis, that has so many tentacles to it that it bears a lot of discussion. First of all, from a national security posture, we're cutting down 10 active brigades. So that could be, you know, 80 to 100,000 people that we're cutting. And if you read down further in the article, they've said that if sequestration continues on into fiscal year 2014 and 15, it could even affect more, both active duty and National Guard and Reserve troops. That's kind of a scary thought, first and foremost, from a national security standpoint. Secondly, of course, from my perspective anyway, it has a major impact on the companies that support the work of the Army in this case, whether they're supplying uniforms, munitions, IT services, whatever it is, there's going to be a lot less support as the Army downsizes and cuts these brigades. And there are an awful lot of companies, not just in this town, although there are plenty here, but across the country, that have kind of ridden up the wave over the past 10 years due to all of the activities we've had in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think that those companies understand now and will understand even more clearly later that they're in for a rude awakening, that they rode the wave up, but they're going to have to ride it down.
Haven't they been thinking of that, though? I mean, if they haven't, I'm not sure that it's – I really feel that bad for them.
Well, I think that there are still an awful lot of people into early spring, late winter in both the contracting community and in the Pentagon who thought that we would have a last-minute deal that would avoid the worst part of sequestration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's evidenced by the fact that we saw later in the springtime, Pentagon spending ratchet back 50% from 1 month in 2013 to the same month in 2012. And so I think while some people had been planning on it, obviously not everybody had. So this is the realization that if you've been solely selling to the Army, you might want to find other things to do to sustain your company. And if you're
Army, print your resume.
Right. If you're the Army, you're looking at ways new and innovative to supply national security needs.
The issue here, too, John, is we're not just going to see 80,000 soldiers go away. If you're going to have 80,000 fewer soldiers, you're probably going to need fewer civilians to work around those soldiers and serve the needs of those soldiers and the infrastructure there.
Yes, most definitely. And if you have, you know, the Department of Defense, 2 million federal employees, they probably employ at least close to half of the civilians. So will we see, you know, buyouts, early outs for those employees? And I think, you know, the interesting thing for me, again, with Larry's point about the national security, I mean, what, if anything, is it going to say about the strength of our military? What's it going to say about our ability as a nation to respond to any unforeseen international events that may transpire that you can't anticipate? But certainly, I underlined while Larry was talking, members of Congress expressing concerns about the prospects of greater cuts down the road, and it dovetails really with what you were saying about program cuts in the defense industry. I mean, members of Congress, these are jobs for their districts. These installations are in New York and Texas and Kentucky, North Carolina. That consortium of those congressional districts and those members from the House and Senate will have a lot to say about it. And I guarantee the states that aren't covered here, where there are installations, the political antenna are going to be up in members of as well.
From a strictly fiscal perspective, granted that we're in a time where everybody's anticipating cuts all across government, the opportunity exists for Congress to essentially get out of this, get off easy by saying, okay, we'll do another round of BRAC. And that way we can only vote up or down and we can go back to our districts as we've done in the past and say, I didn't want to vote for this, but we really need to get rid of all these other ones. And so in exchange for that, I had to do this one that affects us here at home. And they are saying absolutely not on both sides of the aisle and both chambers.
And you're exactly, that's exactly what I was going to say, Francis. BRAC has been rejected out of hand. And to John's point, you're kind of tying the military leadership's hands in terms of how do they reduce their costs by taking certain things right off the table,
mm-hmm.
whether it's base realignment and closure, whether it's an obsolete weapons program that nevertheless operates in a key congressional district or state. You know, these are things that managers in the private sector don't have to deal with on the same level anyway as people in government, particularly people in the military. So when you see these cuts and you see Congress doing some hand-wringing, yeah, it does, it all ties in together, guys. You got to let the leaders lead, and you know the pain's going to come. It's just a question of whether we're all going to feel a little bit or some people are going to feel it a lot.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Larry Allen. It's from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Army to Cut Brigades at 10 U.S. Bases, and you can find it and all of our countdown stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important story of the week selected by John Salamone. We'll wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown next on In-Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
Life is filled with uncertainty, military life especially. AFMA can help you breathe easy through it all. Since 1879, AFMA has helped military families with low-cost military life insurance and the best survivor assistance. We're experts at helping you manage the complexities of military life and securing your family's financial well-being. Call 1-877-398-2263 today or go to AAFMAA.com to see how we can help you.
What is the power of Ingenuity? It's a commitment by nearly 20,000 ITT Excellus employees to support our nation's military service members, veterans, and their families. That's why they launched the Excellus Action Corps, an employee volunteer program to serve those who have served us so bravely. Visit ExcellusActionCorps.com to learn more and join Excellus employees in your community as volunteers. That's ExcellusActionCorps.com. Excellus. The power of Ingenuity.
What you can't see about what you see. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, eye problems don't always give you a heads up. Dr. Jinan Sadeen of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says they can affect people of any age and might not have symptoms until late in the condition. Older people have a greater chance of developing eye disease and other vision problems, so Dr. Sadeen says people ages 65 or older should have their eyes checked every 2 years, or as recommended by their eye doctor.
For example, people with diabetes should have an annual comprehensive dilated eye exam to detect diabetic retinopathy at an early stage.
Older people might notice some symptoms, such as difficulty driving at night or seeing billboards or road signs, but some problems are a normal part of aging and can be easily corrected with glasses or contact lenses. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Buried in contracts that need to be awarded, pressured by urgent deadlines and tight budgets, Integrity Management Consulting Single Award GSA BPA makes it easy to relieve the stress. Integrity delivers credentialed acquisition professionals who have the experience to deal with today's challenges. Choose a partner who gives you the exact support you need, when and where you need it, nationwide. Take the pressure off by working with Integrity. Learn more at consultwithintegrity.com.
If you're not reading federalnewsradio.com, you're missing out on the most read website in the federal market, featuring federal news and information that affects you every day. Here's what readers are saying about federalnewsradio.com.
It's a one-stop shop on federal issues, the most comprehensive of all the websites.
The news content is timely and fresh.
Unbiased news and clear information that's easy to understand.
Make it your daily read for the news you need. federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown this week features the most important stories of the week selected by Larry Allen and John Salamone, and we're up to the most important story of the week selected by John Salomon. The headline is from federalnewsradio.com. Supreme Court's DOMA decision grants thousands of feds access to benefits. And this was a big deal in the United States in general, but this was an especially big deal, I think, in the federal community for a couple of reasons, John.
Yeah, and really that's the reason why I chose this as my number one story. I mean, any time that you have a Supreme Court decision, but let alone any decision that impacts, you know, a large number of federal employees, approximately 34,000, it is a big deal. And I think, you know, if you look at the trends and look at how things have been evolving over the past several years, I mean, members of Congress and the administration were taking action to extend the benefits to same-sex partners. Bills in the House and Senate were introduced with varying degrees of activity. The Obama administration had issued some executive orders, but with this ruling, it really opens up the door for federal employees involved in same-sex marriages to extend health benefits, life insurance, long-term care, CSRS and FERS benefits, and also TSP. You know, from my standpoint, one of the other interesting aspects of this article is that really it's going to require some strong program oversight from OPM. And if you look at where OPM is right now as an agency and where they're headed, they have program responsibilities for the Affordable Care Act, the state run exchanges. And just 2 weeks ago, they announced buyouts at OPM. So I don't know how much this how much workload this is going to add, but it does beg the question about whether OPM is positioned to continue to take on additional responsibilities when they're, in fact, offering buyouts and early outs for their employees.
And Larry, this ties into something we talked about earlier in the program, which is the workload gets heavier because nobody's taking away things for the agencies to do. They're just adding things on and cutting budgets.
Right. And OPM can always do what a lot of government workforces do, and OPM itself does, which is outsource a lot of this to contractors. What could possibly go wrong? Except for the number three story that John had earlier,
exactly,
about background checks being done by contractors. So, you know, that's an issue that they're going to have to address. And, you know, you look at things in government, I think the basic thing here is we want to provide equal coverage, equal protection, but you don't want people to play the system. Whether you're in a heterosexual relationship or a homosexual relationship, you want everybody to kind of play by the rules. So whether it's OPM itself or somebody that they hire to augment their internal staff, it's a function that's going to have to be done and done correctly.
How different is the result of this Supreme Court case, John, going to be from what the White House has already deemed through executive order?
I think it's incredibly different. I think the actions that the White House took were really met with lukewarm approval. Things like, you know, 24 hours of paid leave and joining credit unions and fitness facilities.
Was there a perception that it was kind of token stuff?
Yeah, I think that's what the perception was. And this certainly obviously strengthens the ability to collect those benefits and really it goes way beyond what the administration was attempting to do through executive order.
The execution of this, as you've said, seems to be the trick, whether that's going to be effective or not. What has to happen? How will we be able to tell 2 years from now whether this is working okay? I mean, is it going to be as obvious as there's some kind of backlog or problem or something like that? Or might it be something that is a little more quiet, but equally as ineffective for the people who are trying to get these benefits or supposed to have them?
I'm going to tie this back to my number two story, and it really depends on the measures that OPM puts into place. Hmm. You know, one of the arguments to extend the benefits was that we're creating recruitment. We may not necessarily be recruiting and attracting the best and brightest federal employees. Well, does this make a difference in recruitment, in retention? Does it make a difference? Is there a cost difference? Are there better engagement scores and the employee viewpoint survey? Mm-hmm. So I think there are a lot of mechanisms to measure it. It's just a matter of OPM putting that framework in place to define those measures and make sure that they're continuing to look at it and identify and update those measures accordingly.
Any push on the contractor side of this equation for them to do some of these things that the federal government's now going to have to do you think, Larry?
Well, in fact, Francis, I think a number of private sector companies, whether they're contractors or others, already have policies like this in place. So to John's point about making the federal workforce a competitive place to hire and attract quality people, you want the government to be on at least as the same footing as the people that they're doing business with across the table. And for those contractors that are a little bit behind the curve, I think this sends a strong message that it's time for them to come up to the federal standards as well.
All right. The most important federal news story of the week is selected by John Salamone, is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Supreme Court's DOMA decision grants thousands of feds access to benefits. It's by Federal News Radio's Melissa Dawkins, and you can find that and all of the stories on this week's countdown linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We have a minute left, and I want to ask Larry first. You go through, I know, a very deliberative process, as do you, John, when you choose these. Name just quickly, if you can, the subject or the headline or whatever of the story that maybe you left off the list that you were going to add, and you said, no, I'll go with these three instead.
I probably would have gone with John's number three story on background checks, because that's something that's been getting so much play, and frankly, I'm surprised it's more than a one-day story.
And, John, what'd you leave off? What didn't quite make the cut?
I actually did look at the collaboration story, so I think we were looking at the same
story. Great minds think alike.
It's unbelievable.
I've once again chosen two geniuses for this program. It's
poor
fantastic.
The easy way out.
Yeah.
Thank you both very much for being on. Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners. Good to see you, my friend.
Thank you, Francis.
And John Salamone of FMP Consultants. It's good to see you as always.
Thank you, Francis, and happy 4th of July.
Thank you. Happy Independence Day to both of you. And the Federal News Countdown on hiatus because of the holiday next week. You can find this program archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, along with all of the stories that John and Larry chose for this week's Federal News Countdown. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.